Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate. Say you don't need no diamond rings, and I'll be satisfied. Tell me that you want the kind of things the money just can't buy. I don't care too much for money. Money can buy me love. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
This is Drew Tignanelli here, Money, Riches, and Wealth. Tonight, I am interviewing a person that needs no introduction. We're going to be discussing his book, Invested. It is the autobiography of the Charles Schwab Company, the trials, tribulations, and successes of Charles Schwab. And with me tonight is Charles Schwab himself. Chuck, I appreciate you doing this with me tonight.
Well, thank you, Drew. It's always a pleasure to talk with you, and I love what you do as an investment advisor, and you've had a great career, and so it's my pleasure to be with you.
Well, sir, I've always wanted to especially personally thank you for what you did to transform my company and the industry as a whole. But not only do I get to personally thank you, but to honor you publicly for what Charles Schwab and Company has done to transform my company in 1993 from a commission-based firm to a fee-only independent financial advisory firm, which I believe transformed us into a much more professional firm.
And, yeah, absolutely.
And your efforts and your perseverance in the Charles Schwab Company really helped myself. And what is there, about 8,000, 10,000 other companies that are doing business with you now?
Easily across the country. It's several trillion dollars in terms of client assets that we help advisors do the work that they do. They've taken all the conflicts out of the relationship with their client by virtue of charging simply a fee based upon your services rendered. And we do the transaction work for you. And even now, it's even better because we don't even charge a commission. So
yep.
I think all the customers have got to be really happy.
And, sir, that's the thing that I really enjoyed about your book, Invested, is the passion that you had throughout 1975 when they, and a lot of people don't understand this, but the brokerage industry was regulated up until 1975. Government said how much money these guys could make charging commissions and so forth.
It was outrageous. When you go back and look at it, and of course, it used to be the Wall Street Journal would be filled with all these various NASD violations that people were charging way too much money, and it was really not a great period for Wall Street. But I think things have been cleaned up, and I think the development of investment advisors and your business has really brought to the public a fantastic new relationship. It's much more like the new set of lawyers, new set of doctors who don't charge commission; they charge a fee based upon the results of their services that they've rendered.
But, you know, so help me to understand, because I do this show, I try to educate the public and so forth, but the commission-based business is still 90% of the financial advisory service business. Why is the public not yet understand the differential?
Well, I think you have some of the best salesmen in the world out there still selling stories, still selling what I call stories, the opportunity to make a zillion dollars. And, of course, you know that doesn't happen that way. It happens one out of a million times.
Like what does Warren Buffett say? The clients are driving the Toyota Corollas and the brokers are in the limousines?
So. And I think there's one other thing. People don't see the commissions. They don't add them up over a period of time. It's just sort of a transaction that happens multiple times over a year where an advisory fee is a continuing thing, but you're continuing to monitor their account. And I think that's a much better relationship.
But, you know, firms like ours, we do, for the same amount of fee, we do extensive tax planning and estate planning and comprehensive financial planning for the same fee, yet the public doesn't seem to understand what they're getting from commission-based people.
Well, what happens, I think in many ways, Drew, there's just simply not enough education. You don't get it in high school. You don't get it in college. So financial literacy about these understandings are simply missing, and the public still has thinking about it. And I think there'll be more information delivered in schools in the future, but right now it's pretty much near zero.
I interviewed your daughter at least 7 or 8 years ago on that exact topic. Isn't that her passion?
Yeah, that's her passion. We do a lot with the Boys and Girls Club. We probably educated a million kids on the beginnings of financial literacy, what they should be looking at. But it's a continuous process. You know, people get lazy. They don't understand why they're not doing well at investing. They base their thing upon some sexy story, not a comprehensive look at how they should have portfolio allocation and add to it over each year, every year, compounding, all those kinds of notions are pretty complicated. And thank goodness we have people like you that are the people who explain to the client what you're doing and why you're doing it, and clients get much better results.
I'd like to go over some of the things in your book that were fascinating. So 1975, you start the company, they deregulate the brokerage industry, and the brokerage firms raise their commissions even higher, and you cut commissions on trading when they're deregulated by 75%.
I know.
I mean, that was amazing.
That was amazing to me, too. And the fact that I was really nervous that day when I saw Merrill Lynch was jacked their rates up.
You were afraid they were going to match you.
Yeah, I certainly did. I thought I'd have no business, of course. but the gap was huge and gave me and other people that were an opportunity to build a great business. And, of course, over the years, we've become one of the largest in the business.
Yep.
By offering great service.
So this is Drew Tignanelli here. I'm live now. What you just heard was the first 6 minutes of about 17 minutes of taping with Charles Schwab on his book Invested. And what an honorable man he is, and gave us graciously enough time to go over his book Invested, but also talk about some of the nuances about the business and what it took for him to survive as a company. It seems like he's been successful forever, but I think when you hear the next segment coming up in the next part of the show, you're going to realize that there were a lot of potential for him to go under and not be the successful company that he became as Charles Schwab and Company. And as I honored him in the first part of the show, because of Charles Schwab and Company, that independent fee-only financial advisors like myself and all those colleagues in NAFA dedicated to fiduciary advice, it's because of him that we have the ability to do this. And so I'm looking forward to sharing the next part of the interviews with him. We're going to do each part all the way up through the end of the show. I'll come back on every so often and talk about different segments. But right now, we got to go to traffic. We're going to be right back with our interview with Charles Schwab. This is Drew Tignanelli, president of the Financial Consulate and host of Money, Riches, and Wealth. So often a radio listener calls me saying, I've been listening to you for years and have been meaning to call. When they come in for their comprehensive financial physical, they say, I wish I had done this years ago. If you've been meaning to call and meet with us, then do not wait. Call now to learn more about our trademark financial physical. The financial physical is designed to be a comprehensive second opinion analyzing all your goals and objectives. Are you maximizing tax efficiencies? Will you be able to maintain your lifestyle in retirement? Is your portfolio properly allocated, or just a few of the many parts of the physical? The best part of our service is you get to see the final product before you decide if you want to pay for it. We do this to assure you we are not selling product, and we guarantee the physical to be truly beneficial. Do not wait any longer. Call 410-823-7283. That's 410-823-SAFE, or visit us online at financialphysical.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
We're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth, and I'm playing the interview with Charles Schwab and Company that I taped a week or two ago. And let me just set the stage for you where we're at right now. The first 6 minutes you heard, And we ended with he cut commissions 75%. Now, to put this in perspective, in 1975, many industries in America were regulated, the railroad industry, the airline industry, the brokerage industry, and many others. And you had to charge only what government said you could charge. So commissions rates were standardized by the government. 1975, they deregulated. You could charge anything you want. It's totally up to you. Schwab cuts commissions 75%. He's afraid that the other brokerage firms are going to meet him and cut them also to fear that his discount rate was going to savage their business, but they didn't. They raised them by 5 to 10%, and Schwab took off like there was no tomorrow, but it wasn't easy. And that's what we're going to hear next in these next approximately 3.5 minutes of tape. And I'll come back and tell you where we are and what's happening with Schwab from that point forward. Right now, we're going to hear what Chuck has to say, how it went from there.
1981, you sell the company to Bank of America, which technically today owns Merrill Lynch. So do you regret that decision years ago?
Well, not really. I was just part of my growing up process. I needed to finance the company. Wall Street would not help me finance the company because we were mortal competitors, of course. At least they perceived that, and it's probably true. So they didn't want to help finance me. So I went to banks. Bank of America liked our business model so much, they threw an offer on the table to buy the whole company. Well, I didn't have much money at the time. I was a young entrepreneur, so I was very attracted to that. But it was a four-year spell where I was with the Bank of America. I learned a lot, and then fortunately, as it turned out, I was able to buy the company back from them in a leveraged transaction in 1987. And, of course, we have been independent ever since that point.
But that was the first time that Bank of America had to be bailed out by Nicholas Brady back then, I believe. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. That was through 1985. They had made seriously bad loans to lots of countries in the South America area. They Greek loans. They had, Greek shipping guys. They had a lot of loans there, and that went down the tubes.
Yep.
And so they made some bad loan decisions, and also they had a huge creeping bureaucracy in the bank. It was protected by banking laws at the time, and then deregulation came for banks a little later on, and so they were left holding
right.
An inefficient bag.
So you buy the company back in 1987. You borrowed a ridiculous amount of money in many ways, but you take the company public about 10 or 9 months later,
right,
in September of 1987, 1 month before the crash, that you would have never been able to take it public after that for at least 3 or 4 years.
A couple of years, exactly. So I was pretty lucky in that respect because I wanted to deleverage as fast as I could. I thought the markets were in a sort of a tough situation, and so I wanted to make a public offering. And, of course, we suffered quite a bit in that time period. But I talk a lot about it in the book. It's sort of an interesting thing I look back on now, not with great love for it, but at least I wanted to tell our public and our employees what it was like in those days.
Yeah, in 1987, after the crash, Schwab and Company struggled because of some risk management issues that had happened.
Exactly. And so that never we learned a lot. That'll never happen again, and it hasn't happened in 33 years since,
yep.
But I learned a lot as a young man.
Which is an interesting point. In 1999, sir, I wrote an article and said, the reason that we do business with Charles Schwab and Company is because they don't do the crazy kinds of things that will blow them up in the future if there's ever another financial crisis.
Right.
And 10 years later, all the wirehouse brokerage firms blew themselves up, but Schwab did not need.
No, we went right through it, sailing right through. Our capital base was untouched, frankly. So we learned a lot from my early experiences. So never to be happened again. So we're a very safe company in that respect.
So anyway, so we're back and I'm live again. So listen to what he does. So He starts the company, 75. He cuts commission 75%. He struggles to, you know, really get the company's going, but he's, you know, he's just not making a lot of money. And here comes Bank of America, says, you know, hey, we want to buy this company, and we're going to give you a lot of money for it. And Chuck Schwab's thinking, you know, I don't have a lot of money. I never grew up with a lot of money. I'll take a lot of money if you want to give it to me. But then quickly realizes he made a absolute horrible mistake selling it to Bank of America because they were financially in trouble, in deep trouble. They had made a lot of loans to Central American and South American companies, and they were in deep financial difficulties. And so he buys it back with a lot of debt in 1987, January, and the crash of 87 is coming in October, but he manages to take the company public. What does that mean? It means that he took it private in January, and then he sells stock to the public. The public buys that stock, gives the company the money. Now the company has the money to continue forward and growing, and the crash happens, and he needed all that cash that he got to get through some other difficulties. Hard to explain. You have to read the book to understand the risk management problems they had in 1987, and they rectified that in 2008, as I talked about, Charles Schwab and Company did not take a nickel of TARP money to survive the 2008 downturn, and that is an important point. And what he's saying is he learned the lessons in 87. He wasn't going to go through it ever again. And he proved that in 2008 when he sailed through something that could have taken down almost every brokerage firms except those like Fidelity, Charles Schwab, TD Ameritrade. You know, they had the right you know, processes in to protect themselves. I want to go to one more segment before we go on our next break, and then we're going to come back, second part of the show, and finish up with some of the interview, which actually is the most interesting part of the show. But right now, I want to do this segment, and you'll learn more about why we chose Charles Schwab as a custodian for our clients.
You know, the thing that really convinced me back in 1992 or 3 that I wanted to be independent, fee only, and work with a company that had the same dedication to clients that we did was you're eliminating the IRA fee. And this is serious. I remember saying to my colleague, I said, you know, this is a company I've got to work with because I hate those little nuisance fees that these guys hit us with, $35, $50 for an IRA and this and that. And you eliminated, and I said, that's the kind of company I want to work with.
Well, thank you. We turned out we got millions of people who felt the same way and became IRA accounts with us, and what a great way for people to save. And we made money in other kinds of things, whether it's transactions on mutual funds and so forth. So we didn't go without, but it was the right thing to do to encourage people to save more and build their nest egg for their future needs.
And you're still doing it today when you drop your commissions to zero to trade.
Yep.
I mean, you know, how do
we want to take all the friction out to get more and more people into the investing thing. It's the essence is sort of the foundation of America's great strength, our investor group, the people who save money, who think about that, think about their long-term accumulation, and so that they, yes, Social Security will support them in retirement, but they want to be independent, really, of that, too.
So, you know, here, there, that, and I'm back live, you know, it was that the elimination of fees, and I knew that Charles Schwab and Company was dedicated to the best interests of the client. When I saw him do that in 1992, and he continues to do it, and he just cut commissions down to zero. And, you know, that's why we do business with a company like this. And that's one of the beauties of being independent. Right now, I got to go to traffic and come back. We're going to do the rest of the interview. And this is the best part coming up in the second half of the show of the interview. So right now, we got to go to traffic. Take it away, traffic.
Back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
We're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. Drew Tignanelli live right now. We're running the tape, which was about 16, 17 minutes long,
with Charles Schwab. I had the opportunity, asked him if he would be willing to do this and talk about his book, Invested, The Trials and Tribulations and Successes of the Charles Schwab Company. And started off, he talked about how he cut commissions after deregulation in 1975. All the big brokerage firms raised commissions. And he's had a passion since the early 60s to change the way financial advice is delivered to the public, because he's always felt that the main brokerage firms were disingenuous as to what they were doing for their clients. And he wanted to bring a different way of doing it. And if you read the book and listen to the things that he's done, Charles Schwab, and then forming the Charles Schwab brokerage firm, where he cuts commissions by 75% when these are other people raise them by 5 or 10% under the guise that they're giving great advice. He believed that that just wasn't true. Well, you know, he comes here comes Bank of America. They offer him a boatload of money in 1983. And he accepts it. He takes the money. And within a year, he realizes what a serious mistake he made, because they were just a overblown bureaucracy. And it was not going to allow his company to continue to do what he passionately wanted it to do. And so he decides to take it back again and buy it back from them, because he knew they were in trouble financially and needed the money. So he buys it back in 1987. And 9-10 months later, the crash of 87 is coming. And they're going to have some financial difficulties because of some risk management control systems that weren't properly in place. And he manages to take the company public in September of 87. And next thing you know, he's got all the money to survive through the crash of 87, get things right, and such that in 2008, after the 87 crash, he swore this company will never make these mistakes again. And in 2008, when almost every brokerage firm in the country, except for ones like him and Fidelity and TD Ameritrade, they all asked for TARP money to help them survive, and Schwab didn't need a nickel from the government to survive. And we had talked about that in 1999 as to why Schwab would never need this again, because of the way they conducted their business. And he talks about how that impacted him so much in 87 that they went through 2008 without the concern that their company could go under in that financial crisis of 2008. In these next two segments, which are only about 2 minutes long, we're going to talk about one of the best pieces of advice Schwab can give you as an investor. And so we'll play that first, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about the next segment. So take it away. It's the first segment, number five.
You said something in your book that really hit me hard, and that was, you said, an investor always needs to be an optimist. And I thought that was just a great line.
That's for sure.
So let me ask you a question. How, after when you're sitting there, 9/11 happens, how do you remain an optimist during that moment of time?
Well, I remember that very clearly, and as a matter of fact, we were on the phone. I saw that occur on CNN at the time, and I was on a business meeting call, and we knew we were in trouble for a short period of time. But we know you just have to believe in the strength of America. What we have here is so unique throughout the world. It's a premier capitalist system. We take care of our people at the bottom end, but we also generate through innovation, through creativity, through new investments, new products, new things that everyone can enjoy.
Yeah.
That's what makes the world spin here.
So, you know, he says that you always need to be an optimist, and he talks about how great a country America is, and it is a great country. And there's no doubt that this country has survived incredible things, including Pearl Harbor and 9/11 and many other catastrophes. And he's right. An investor always needs to be an optimist. Now, I challenge him again in this next segment and say, well, what about all the divisiveness that's happening now? So let's play that and see what his response is to that.
And, you know, the only thing that could probably hurt the country is division. And, gosh, I'll tell you, it seems like division is the number one issue right now. I don't understand.
It is, but I think there is a sense behind all the rhetoric that there really is a solid group of people that really maybe the two coast states are crazy, but the other 48 states, I think, will be pretty well off in terms of will get the right direction for the country. And I think what's happening now, you have to be confident about our future.
Yeah.
No other way to express it.
So, you know, he says it as it is, you know, is that, you know, look, you got some lunatics on both sides of the country that are driving the narrative. But for the most part, the average American believes in America. And whether you're liberal or conservative or Republican or Democrat or whatever the case may be, there's a sense that we want to be together and work together and try to figure out how to solve our differences without the division that very small factions try to drive on each side of the table. And, you know, we need more people like Charles Schwab out there, grandfatherly types that tell us like it is. And, you know, at the next part of the last part of our show, we're going to learn the last 2 minutes of the interview where he sums it up and he says these are the kind of things that, you know, I think everyone should be passionate about. And it would be an even greater country if we can all just focus on these few things. But there's some other great parts of the interview. We talk about how Chuck Schwab just seems to draw really, really good people to him. And if you look at the upper echelon management of Charles Schwab, and I'm going to talk a little bit about that, but when I come back live in the second part, in the last part of the show, I'm going to tell you the actual story that I alluded to about the current CEO of Charles Schwab and Company, Walt Bettinger, and what a quality person he is, and that's the kind of people that Chuck Schwab draws to him, and the reason is because, you know, Chuck never tried to become a billionaire. He'll tell you, like Warren Buffett, he just did what he was passionate about, and he just continued to do it, and he just continued to persevere. And one day he woke up and he realized he was the chairman of an incredibly – it's actually – you could consider it the first or second largest brokerage firm in America, depending on how you drive it, whether it's assets that they're holding or whether it's revenue or anything of that sort. It is a very powerful company now in a country, but it wasn't what he set out to do. He just wanted to follow his passion, and that's the thing that always attracted me in the early days when we left the brokerage industry, became independent and fee-only, and we had to find a custodian to work with, and Charles Schwab was on the absolute top of that list. So I got to go to traffic, and we're going to come back and listen to the last part of the interview. Take it away, traffic. This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, and president of the Financial Consulate. Are you looking for a professional financial advisor that you can trust and help you through all stages of life? Having a team of comprehensive personal financial advisors and CPAs gives us the ability to help you prepare your tax return, strategize to help you minimize tax liability, help you visualize and reach your retirement goals, and help guide you in every other facet of personal financial planning. We demonstrate these abilities every Wednesday night on our radio show, Money, Riches, and Wealth. Have you been wanting a second opinion? Then consider our trademark service, the Financial Physical. We guarantee if you don't come away from your Financial Physical with a sense of immense value, then there will be absolutely no charge. Call 410-823-7283 to speak with me and the team of comprehensive personal financial advisors and CPAs. That is 410-823-SAVE or go online to financialphysical.com. That's financialphysical.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBN.
We're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. This is Drew Tignanelli live right now, and we're running the interview that I did with Charles Schwab. I did it a couple weeks ago, and we've broken it into segments, and we're going to run that last segment. In this last segment, what we talk about is we talk about the campaign, Talk to Chuck. He actually struggles with it, and it's fascinating. And then we talk about his summation in his book, The Things That Everyone Should Be Passionate About, and I think it's perfect that everyone should take to heart what he says here, and then we just thank him graciously for giving us the time and encouraging us that no matter what the struggles are in America, America is the greatest country. So listen, and I'll be back after this.
One of the great campaigns of your company was Talk to Chuck, and you say in your book that you actually struggled with that campaign.
Well, it worked quite well, and sort of interesting. I obviously made a huge commitment to do that, I agreed with our marketing people that it showed the commitment of the senior management, of the person in charge of the company, that he was really committed for your benefit, your success as an investor, all those things, and reducing costs, reducing conflicts of interest, all those things lead to better performance for the client.
Now, you just recently, not too long ago, your CEO is Walt Bettinger, and what a quality man he is. I'm not going to go into the full story, but I had a client call me and tell me a story of Walt Bettinger. And if I told the story, it's just unbelievable what a person who is the CEO of Charles Schwab and Company did in this situation. A client would call me up and say, I'm really glad you're with Charles Schwab and Company and keeping my money there because that's the kind of company I want to do business with when they have a CEO that would do this kind of thing for people.
Thank you very much. I honor him every day as having the same values that I do, is really looking after with a fiduciary sense of responsibility towards our customers. Now, if there's an issue, we want to get identified and fixed.
Right. So I wanted to finish with this, sir, and that is you give a list of things that are important to everyone, and they should stand by these values: family, people, philanthropy, health, passion, politics, and business. That's what you say in your book. I think it's perfect.
And add maybe some self-education. You got to develop yourself all the time, continuously. Really important.
Absolutely. Your book is Invested. It's a great book. There's a lot to learn in there. You'd give a lot of practical advice throughout the book, and I can encourage people more to get that and read about that. It's not just all success when you start a business.
Yeah, no, there are a lot of ups and downs, Drew, along the way, and for sure it's a story about an entrepreneur but what the great opportunity that America offers any entrepreneur. You have to be persistent at it.
Absolutely. Commit. America is the greatest country, as you said. There is no doubt. It's a unique place.
Thank you, Drew.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate your time.
Talk with you soon. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye. So we're back, and let me tell you the story. I didn't want to do it on the tape with Charles Schwab because I knew Walt Bettinger didn't want to necessarily talk about it. But here it's here in Baltimore, and it's important that you hear. So my client worked in a veterans hospice in Ohio. And basically, they had a situation where the vets who are dying could tell them what they want as a last wish, basically. And this one vet says that he had a financial planner that he really appreciated, and he did a lot to help him when he was just out of the military, and he had some goals and objectives. And this financial advisor helped him do them, and he would just, as he's headed into his last hours, days of his life, he'd like to just thank him. So they didn't know who he was. All they knew his name was Walt.
And somebody figured out it was Walt Bettinger, who left and went into corporate life with Charles Schwab and Company, ultimately became the CEO. So somebody contacts Walt Bettinger and says this vet wants to do that. And you know what Walt Bettinger says? He says, okay, I would really appreciate that. He gets on a private jet, flies to Ohio, meets privately with him for a half a day, and spends a half a day with him, just talking with him and reminiscing and whatever, and then flies back. Nobody really ever knew that he did this, and my client knew, and he calls me up and he says, you know, I'm just, you know, ecstatic that you have us invested with Charles Schwab as the custodian, because if this is the kind of quality people that run that company, it's the kind of company I want to be with. And, you know, Chuck Schwab, what you were hearing there in that interview was truly from the heart of the man. This is who he is. I knew this 30 years ago. That's why I wanted to leave the brokerage industry. And I was with Raymond James and Associates, and I was offered opportunities to go with other brokerage firms. But I wanted to be independent, and I wanted to be able to work with companies that I knew had the same passion for clients as we did. And I knew Charles Schwab had that, because as he said there, you know, toward the end of the interview, it's reducing conflicts of interest are important to him. He doesn't, I don't work for Schwab. I don't have any allegiance to Schwab. Matter of fact, they get mad at me sometimes because I'm constantly saying to him, what can you do to lower our costs even more? And we're very aggressive that if we can, if we look around the industry and say, well, wait a minute, this company over here is doing this. Why do we have to pay this with you guys? And you know, they listen to us, and they don't just slough us off and say, you know, hey, if you don't like it, just hit the road. They listen, and they say, well, if somebody else is doing it, we have to take it seriously, because he knows that it's not. He doesn't try. He doesn't hold us captive. Like a lot of the brokerage firms, if I was with a brokerage firm, they hold me captive. I have a not-to-compete agreement. I don't have a not-to-compete agreement with Charles Schwab. Charles Schwab does something if 2008 they look like they were going under, or if Charles Schwab refuses to cut their commissions to zero, I can pick up my clients and go to Fidelity. I can pick up my clients and go to TD Ameritrade. Well, TD Ameritrade's taken over by Schwab, but I could go to E-Trade, or I could go to Robinhood, or I could go to Interactive Brokers. It doesn't matter. We're independent. We can go where we want to go. And Chuck knows that, and that's why he's constantly thinking with his CEO and his other executives as to what can we do to continue to make Charles Schwab a company that our clients, and whether they're individual investors or whether they're independent advisors like myself, want to continue to do business with us. And they don't hold us captive in any way, shape, or form. We can leave anytime we want, and they know that. And they continue to work to make that company as great as possible for our clients. And, you know, I can't honor the man enough for that. And I was extremely appreciative that he was willing to give us that time to do this interview, because I think it is important that the public understand that he is not just out to make a lot of money. He was not out to become a billionaire. He had a passion to change how financial advice was delivered to the public. And he single-handedly had the biggest impact on the creation of independent, fee-only fiduciary advisors, which is the fastest growing segment of the industry. And if your advisor works for a wirehouse brokerage firm like Wells Fargo or Merrill Lynch or Morgan Stanley or Ameriprise or Edward Jones or Raymond James, they are not independent. They are not fee only. They are not fiduciaries on a regular 24/7 basis. And that's what Charles Schwab is trying to change. And he has done an immense amount of change in the industry. And I thank him for that. And I honor him for that. And I appreciate the time he spent with us tonight. And I hope you enjoyed that interview also. And next week, I have a guest, but I have no idea right now who it is, because that was just too good. Anyway, This is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless. Things are gonna